Good morning, good afternoon to everyone on today's PPSC PDP call on Thursday the 11th of November. We have Jeff Newman, Aubrey Doria, James Bladel, Tatiana Kramsova, Paul Diaz. From staff, we have Marika Konings, Margie Milam, and Gisela Gruber-White. And we have apologies today from Alex Gokuru. If I could please just remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Jeff.
Great. Thank you very much. Welcome to the weekly call of the PDP Work Team. This is Jeff Newman, the chair of the PDP Work Team. And on the list earlier this week, you will have seen that Marika has sent around the what we're calling the draft final report and recommendations, which basically takes all the public comments that we've received along with the discussion that we've had the last couple months on the public comments. And incorporates it into one report, also adds some things about, some details about bylaws and the manual that are some really good stuff. It's smaller than, thankfully, it's smaller than the initial report and organizes things, I believe, a lot better than the way we had done the initial report. Makes it more readable. And so I think what we're going to spend the day doing is going through, Marika's going to go through kind of the structure and highlight some areas that were added that everyone should really pay particular attention to. And then we'll start deep diving into some of the substantive issues that are highlighted that still require a good deal amount of discussion. On schedule, we're not going to publish this, obviously, before the deadline, which is the 15th. That's not going to be published for review. We currently have, I believe the schedule, and maybe I'll let Marika talk a little bit more about this, but the schedule for the Cartagena meeting is supposed to come out on Monday or so, or somewhere early next week, so that we do currently have a time slot on the Wednesday, either Wednesday or Thursday, I'm forgetting now, and Marika will correct me. But we do have an hour-and-a-half time slot that was put on there, or will be put on there. One of the things we want to discuss is whether it's how to use that time slot, and part that will in part depend on how much progress we make. But it could be used in one of several ways. The first way we can use it is if we do feel like we have some things to present to the community just to get some input, we can use it as an open session to do some slides and maybe solicit some input on some of the open items, or we could just do a work team working session, meaning that we could use it. It's not going to be a closed meeting; anybody could listen in. But really, just use it to continue to continue the discussion of where we left off. And Marika has put the time on there. It's 9:30 to 11 local Cartagena time. So. FYI, I believe that may be there may be other meetings. Well, there are definitely other meetings going on that may affect some of you at that time slot. I believe that is the current, and things can change. So I believe that's the current time slot also for the Who Is review team session and the security and stability. The security, stability, and resiliency work team session. So keep that in mind, and why don't we let's start with a discussion of that, just to see how. Actually, you know what? I'm going to save that. Let's save that for the last 10 minutes after we talk through the report. This way, we'll get a better idea of where we are. But I just wanted to introduce that for now. Alan just wrote that it's worth remembering that Cartagena time is the same as Eastern time for remote participation. And with that said, any questions on going forward? Again, really just to emphasize, this was, you know, staff has done a great job on this, on putting this together, but really your review is crucial for this. I know there's going to be a lot of documents that are going to be posted next week, so maybe this could be some incentive to actually do the reading now on this, so that you can get some comments in, because this is really, after new GTLDs are, the process is launched and we're no longer thinking about new GTLDs, this is really this work is of the utmost importance for the GNSO and for our ongoing activities. So with that said, Marika, you want to start walking us through the report?
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm happy to do so. So you see it up on the Adobe Connect, and as you'll recall from the email, there are actually two different documents. There's this, the draft final report, and there's a separate document in which I've basically pulled out the different items that either work team needs some further discussion because there was no clear conclusion from the deliberations to date, or where staff has proposed a number of approaches that the work team might want to take into consideration. Those issues are also highlighted throughout the report, but probably for discussions going forward, it might be easier to work off that table. But I'll start off with the draft final report, and a lot of the changes just mark, the change from the initial report to the final report. A number of chapters have been added. Some of them have been taken out, so I'll just walk you through it. And the executive summary has just made some changes already, highlighting the approach we've taken on coming to this draft final report, the public comments received, how we've addressed them through the public comment review tool. Just a number of items that still need to be added as well. Trying to see what else has been changed here. So basically what I've done as well, here you can already see the change in the different recommendations. For most of these should logically flow the discussions. I've tried to basically review the notes I've taken from the discussions, also looking at the comments we've made in relation to the public comments received, and from there try to finalize the different recommendations, especially those where we said we wanted further input or where we had different options, and several of those we have come to conclusions. But again, I would really encourage everyone to review those to make sure that that reflects what the work team agreed upon. Just moving down the list, there are a number, as I said, that are highlighted where the work team didn't discuss yet a final approach. One example is recommendation 10 on the time frame for the issues report. We did propose a couple of approaches. There were some public comments on this issue. But as far as I'm aware, we didn't firmly decide on one over the other or a hybrid approach of the ones proposed here. So that's one of the items where the work team will need to do a bit further discussion to come to a conclusion. Another one is the fast track approach in recommendation 14. That one's highlighted as well. In the document, staff have made two different proposals that the work team might take into consideration as a recommendation in this area. Again, this is based on the discussions we've had, part of our own thinking of what might be a way forward here. And again, this is an item that we would like you to review and explore the different options or think of other approaches that might be appropriate here. And as we discussed, as this is a draft final report, there's still the opportunity for the work team as well to put out different options and get specific input on those. So another question for the work team will be, I've taken it out now from the executive summary, but in the initial report, we also included the flow chart as a way of showing how the new process would work. The government decided whether it was helpful to include that here again as well, and of course it will need to be updated then reflecting the final or the draft final recommendations that have changed from the initial report to this report. So then basically moving on to chapter two, here just outline basically showing the approach taken that we worked on the basis of the different stages, but instead of including that whole chapter that took up a lot of pages in the initial report, my proposal would be just to include a reference here and a link to the initial report so people can see there the details of those discussions instead of repeating that same section here. You'll see as well this is just a copy and paste of the recommendations because one approach might be as well that the full recommendations are actually here in the chapter two in the body of the report and that a kind of abbreviated version is included in the executive summary. But that's something that the working can discuss once we've actually finalized the main content and then decide on how much detail should be in the executive summary, how much detail should be in the body of the report, maybe taking into account as well that it's likely that only executive summary is translated. So do we need to have the full detail of the recommendations there, or would a detailed summary be sufficient? then moving on to the next chapter, which basically addresses the overarching issues. As you'll see here, on a number of items, I've tried to distill from the notes that we had from the previous discussions a kind of draft conclusion. And again, this is an area where the work team is encouraged to review those draft conclusions to make sure that they are in line with what the work team discussed. On the timing, it's something we discussed before to put together the different durations that we've discussed, so that this will provide a kind of overview of the overall timing a PDP would take. But as there's a lot of flexibility in our proposals, you'll see as well that it's very difficult to have a concrete, you know, exact timing at the end of the process. But at least it should give an indication of the different variations and the margins there are for flexibility. There are some items that still need to be filled in here based on decisions on in other parts of the document, but it should give an idea of the overall timing of a PDP and the different stages involved. Here there are still a number of items as well where further discussion is required. These have also been highlighted, and again, these are also pulled out in the separate document that we'll move to next. Especially, I think, on the voting thresholds. Voting thresholds, they have quite some discussion on a number of these items, but no real conclusion. So I think there the work team needs to deliberate a bit further to come to conclusions that it would like to include here. Similarly for decision-making methodology, what I've done here is actually I've put in the latest version from the Geniuso Working Group guidelines. So this is something else the work team will need to review to see if that should also apply to PDP working groups or whether a different approach should be used for PDP working groups. Another item that still needs to be discussed is transition. So that's another item that's highlighted in the overarching issues. Then in Chapter 4, you'll see the basis for the new Annex A. So basically, we've worked with ICANN Legal in developing, which is basically the skeleton for the new Annex A, and following the discussions the work team has had to really bring that down to a very basic level, just including the main elements and basically leaving the details of the different items for the PDP procedure manual that, you know, can be found in the next chapter. So again, you know, I would strongly recommend everyone to read through this to see if this indeed meets what the work team had in mind. I think from staff perspective, I think, you know, it follows very well different elements and the elements we believe should be in the bylaws versus what should be in the procedure manual, where, you know, more descriptive guidance can be given and as well more flexibility on a number of items can be explained.
Yeah, if I could jump in there. I just really want to emphasize that sections 4 and 5 of this, it is 5, right, even though it says 6.1, 6.2 for policy. Sections that are labeled 4 and 5, that Marika was just going over 4, and then we'll talk about 5. Those are critical, especially for, just to point out that contracted parties have contracts that talk about following the process set forth in the bylaws. And so to the extent that this may or may not affect your contracts, then you may want to take a close look at it, make sure everyone's comfortable with it. Same with the non-contracted parties. These are the things that the contracted parties will point to in policy development processes to determine whether this would be something that would be binding or not. So really want to emphasize that this is critical for everyone to review now, get a sense of where you stand, where your groups may stand, because I have a feeling this will be a heavily commented on part of the report. Thanks, Marika. You can continue. Sorry.
No problem. Thanks. So then moving on to Chapter 5, the Policy Development Process Procedure Manual. So what we've tried to do here is in all those items and the recommendations where we've said, oh, well, more details should be provided in the manual, you know, further guidance should be provided in the manual. We've tried to already, you know, prepare here a first draft of the different elements this manual should contain. And again, you know, I think here as well, if there are any elements we've missed, anything, the ideas as well, putting this out for public comments to get, you know, people's input on what other information should be provided here? Is there, you know, too much, too little detail? But I think we've tried to capture the different steps, you know, looking at the recommendations and really trying to translate that into a procedure manual that can be used as a guide for how a PDP should be run, and also providing, you know, guidance on where there is more flexibility to do, you know, to do certain things or explore certain options. So, again, here are a number of items that also highlighted where, you know, it still depends on the final decision of the work team on a recommendation going one way or the other. For example, if you look at 6.5, the creation of the preliminary issues report, there are two options following the two options that are also put forward in the recommendation. So, you know, those are two options the work team can consider, or, you know, a different option can be created to address that issue. Again, I think there's a proposal here for how a fast track procedure could be done. And there are a couple of items that we included that we actually didn't discuss that we thought might be useful to put in here. For example, how do you end a PDP prematurely? Or let me see, there was another one. It's a termination, the 6.16, termination of a PDP prior to a final report. And also 6.17, amendments or modifications of approved policies. Those are two items that I think we've come across recently in some of the working groups that are ongoing and where there's actually no procedure in existence at the moment. So those are two items where the work team might want to deliberate further to see if that's agreeable or whether there are other approaches they would like to put forward here. I'm seeing Margie has her hand up, so I presume it's in relation to this. So Margie, go ahead.
Yes, this is Margie. I just wanted to expand on these additional sections that weren't covered in the prior work from the working group. On the expedited PDP procedures, the kind of the origins of that, when you take a look at it, is the clauses in, for example, the RAA that talk about expedited procedures. So we looked at that and thought maybe that can be adopted or, you know, changed to at least provide the basis for an expedited procedure. So this is merely a suggestion. You guys, you know, welcome to, you know, try a different approach, but we just thought it would be better to get something on the table for you to explore and see if it makes sense. And we tried, in some sense, to align it with some of the contractual obligations. And then with the respect to the other issues like the termination of the PDP, you know, we're obviously exploring that right now as a possibility with the VI working group, and it sure would be nice to have the manual, you know, provide some sort of basis for that. So these are issues that that we've kind of come across in other, you know, work in the past and thought it'd be useful to highlight.
Okay. Thanks, Martin. I want to thank you guys for doing that, because these are some issues that we hadn't really thought of in our group before. But, you know, I'll note with termination of a PDP, or, you know, we're dealing a little bit with that now in the vertical integration working group as to what to do with that. So these are issues that we are really dealing with in some sense. Marika, there's more, right?
Yeah, this is Marika. You know, we're basically at the end of the body of the report, then we move into the annexes. So the proposal will be to actually have the summary of the public comments in the annex. Basically, now it has just an overview of the different comments received, and once we finalize the public comment review tool, you know, we would include a link there so people can review as well how we've addressed these different comments and the feedback that the work team gave on those. Then the Annex 2, you know, still the marker there for the new PDP flowchart. So, again, once we finalize all the recommendations, I think the group needs to decide whether we want to include another flowchart, and this should then reflect the, you know, the final or the draft final recommendations and map to that. So this is just a placeholder for that. The background section, I don't think we need to make any changes there. It's just where, you know, how this process was initiated and then the different steps that have been taken. Annex 4 is the working group charter, and then we'll need to update the Annex 5, the working group, with the meetings attended and a link to the attendance sheets. So that would basically be the proposal, to have the structure of the report like that, and, you know, working through the different recommendations and then leading up to the new bylaws and the proposed procedure manual. So if any questions, suggestions, comments already at this stage, or whether people first want to have a closer look at the text and provide edits online. Don't see any hands. Maybe I'll move on to the other documents.
This is the document that was sent around, it's dated, I think it was October 28th, that's the date you put on top of it. This was sent around on, let me just double check, if that was actually the date.
I think it was Tuesday.
I think it was this November 1st, was that the document? No, sorry, that's a different one.
Tuesday the 9th.
Yeah, Tuesday the 9th, it was sent around an email. It's also posted on the wiki.
Oh, okay. Tuesday the 9th, right. Oh, I'm looking at the wrong one. Okay. Yes, so Tuesday the 9th, this was sent around. So this is a document that takes, Marika was sort of going through it kind of quickly, but these are the issues that are highlighted in the report as things that we still need to discuss, some comments in there and questions, and then a kind of a suggested approach we can choose to take or not choose to take. We just a straw man put out there so we can get some feedback. And the first one relates to, excuse me, recommendation 6, which is where we say that there's no changes in the bylaws that are recommended for the creation of the issues report by the PDP. We didn't make any recommendations for changes to the bylaws. But we do recommend, including in the manual, a recommendation for the entity requesting the issues report to indicate whether there are any specific items they would like to see addressed in the issues report, which could then be taken into consideration by the council when reviewing the request. In addition, guidance could be provided in the policy development process manual, where the council and or staff could provide advice ahead of a vote on the request for an issues report, whether they feel additional research, discussion, or outreach should be conducted in order to ensure a balanced and informed issues report. So the comment and question are, does the work team agree that the elements that in the issues report should contain could be moved to the operating rules instead of the bylaws? And there seems to be support to not require these elements any longer, but instead encourage the use of different elements. And is there a way to pull up those elements? And so, okay, you'll have to go to a separate one here. It's great if you could do split screen on this stuff, huh?
Yeah, I don't know, we need to put up the Annex A, because I don't think we actually even have that in the report. If I can quickly...
I have a question on this before we go to that, perhaps.
Sure, why don't you do that while we're pulling it up. Okay, Alan?
Yeah, there's text here that says so that council can review when council reviews the request. When does council review a request for issue for an issues report if it's made by someone else?
So that's a good point. So let's just deal with the issue of when it comes from the GNSO community as opposed to an advisory group or the board. So let's put that issue aside, but come back to it because it is
okay.
A good. Okay. So bylaws, and I'm pulling it up separately because I don't know if we can get it up on the screen or not. But
This is Marika. I just put it in the chat. The different elements is basically the proposed issue raised for consideration. B, the identity of the party submitting the issue. C, how the party is affected by the issue. D, support for the issue to initiate the PDP. E, a recommendation from the staff manager as to whether the council should initiate the PDP for this issue. Each staff recommendation shall include the opinion of the ICANN General Counsel regarding whether the issue proposed to initiate the PDP is properly within the scope of the ICANN policy process and within the scope of the GNSO, determining whether the issue is in scope. So those are the main elements, and I think I missed a small part of the end there. But basically, yeah, those are different elements that are currently in the bylaws, but yeah, the question is it just as well suited to put it in the procedure manual, as I think discussions we've had also indicated that, you know, in certain cases, you might not need to include all those elements depending on the issue at stake, and in others, you might want to include others, so it shouldn't be too restrictive either. But a question I had actually before diving into this, because many of these elements do require, you know, the context in which the recommendation has been made as developed in the draft final report. So my question would be, have people had enough time to actually review that, to really deep dive into these issues, or maybe now it's more useful to actually go through the different items so people can make note of those and, you know, in reviewing the reports, you know, take that into account and formulate an opinion so we discuss that next time. I don't know. I don't know how much time people have already had. So
let me ask the question here to try to make some progress on this issue. What are some arguments, what are the pros and cons of, let me ask it a different way. Right now it's in the bylaws. What are the issues with those five elements? Again, what is the proposed issue? Who's the person submitting the part of the issue or party submitting the issue? How is that party affected? And what is the support they have to initiate the PDP? And then a recommendation from the staff manager as to whether the council should initiate the PDP. So I just paraphrased them, but I mean, it seems like the reason they're in the bylaws, I mean, they're pretty basic, and I'm not sure what requests wouldn't have, with the exception of the last one, the recommendation from the staff manager. The first four elements, you know, what is the issue, who's submitting the issue, how is that party affected by the issue, and what support do they have? What is the issue with, are there any issues with keeping that in the bylaws? In other words, is that a hindrance?
This is Marika. If I can comment, I mean, if we're looking at making the bylaws more, you know, really the basic main elements, because there's nothing preventing the work team requiring those elements as part of the procedure manual. So it's more of taking out all those details and, you know, providing the basic elements in the bylaws and providing the more detailed issues like these. And I think there are other elements you might want to see in an issues report and you can add on to, which, again, might not apply to all, but maybe some, and it's an area as well where guidance, additional guidance can be provided in the procedure manual. So I think from a staff perspective, you know, it would make sense to move that to the procedure manual, but there's nothing preventing the work team requiring that as a mandatory element of an issues report just because it's in the procedure manual.
Yeah, and again, I think people should consider that changes to the procedural manual could be made easier than changes to the bylaw. So if there are certain things that, certain protections from either side, whether it's contracted parties or non-contracted parties, that they want to see hard-coded that only the board could change, that's something they should consider. So I don't know if anyone's got a view on that.
Jeff, it's Margie. I have a view on that.
Sure.
In terms of looking back at some of the past PDPs and seeing, you know, the requests that came in, I'm not so sure that some of the answers to those questions are obvious. Let's talk about fast flux or even, you know, vertical integration. When the original request came from, I think, the NCUC, sometimes it becomes almost like we're filling, you know, basically checking the box, but it doesn't really necessarily make sense. And I think that's why we tended towards putting it in the procedural manual, because it wasn't obvious right up front, you know, how some of this would affect the party making the request.
Paul, do you want to address that?
Thanks, Jeff. It's Paul. Yes, I guess I understand where Margie's coming from, but speaking as a rep from a contracted party, you know, we would like to see more things in the bylaws than in the other document, just so that there's clarity and the force of the bylaws. I'm kind of concerned that if we start pushing too many things over, it becomes a catch-all, and we've significantly lowered the importance of the process.
So, okay, Aubrey, you have a response to that?
Sorry, I was in the process of transiting to unmuted when you probably called on me.
Sure.
I guess I tend to be somewhat of the opinion that more of it belongs in procedures than in bylaws. I think the bylaws certainly have to call it out and have to say that there have to be procedures that are followed. But over the years, and I think if I understood Margie correctly, this was the point that was being made, there's so many variations on the way things get done, on the way things get discussed, on what is correct and what makes sense, I guess was the phrase she used, that anything in the bylaws becomes too stiff and becomes too hard to change, as opposed to leaving it up to, you know, the GNSO Council and the GNSO to figure out what the procedures need to be and how they need to work. So while I think the procedures have to be called out and have to be framed by the bylaws, I think that they need to be somewhat more mutable than that. Thanks.
Well, Aubrey, if I can ask you a specific question then, and then we'll allow people to respond. But just so these elements that we just read, so I think there's going to be a philosophical debate in this group, probably with no agreement by the entire group as to the question of how much should be in the bylaws versus how much should be in the policy manual. I think we're going to have disagreement there. But on these specific elements that are called out in the bylaws, do you have an issue with those? Is there any of those elements that you would put?
For example, I have no issue with saying that there needs to be, for example, an issues report that discusses A, B, and C. But to get more precise, no, that there needs to be a preset timetable that is based on what's in the procedures or previous agreement found in. So I think general statements for almost all of the things make sense. I think detailed, prescriptive things are where we start to run into issues.
Okay, Aubrey. Alan.
Jeff, if I could get in the queue.
James. Yeah, sure. Let me get Alan, then I'll get you, James.
Thanks.
Okay. I guess I agree more with Avery than with what Paul said. In the past, the GNSO has proven adept at ignoring issues ignoring prescriptive statements in the bylaws when they just don't make sense or aren't applicable. So I don't think it provides a lot more guarantee. The real only difference between bylaws and procedures is that to change the bylaws, they're likely to be posted publicly, whereas the procedures may not be. They still have to be approved by council and a vehement objection by some, you know, stakeholder group or a good part of council will likely cause it to be revisited anyway. And the example that was given, for instance, of how was the NCSG going to be directly affected by vertical integration or not, that stakeholder group will not be. They felt there was a public interest issue, but, you know, we still haven't, in the VI group, we still haven't documented what the harms are or haven't done a very good job of it. And I don't think that's something that necessarily can be done at the beginning of a process. That may be why you're going into the process. So I think we need flexibility, and I really don't see the harm of putting more of this in the procedure manual and can evolve over time. I would, as much as we don't want make-do work added, we don't want to stop a PDP from going ahead on a technicality either.
So Avery has, and then I'll get to James, but if I can ask the same question I asked Avery, of the elements here, you know, Avery said A, B, and C, which is the proposed issue for, raised for consideration, the identity of the party submitting the issue, and how that party is affected by the issue, would be elements that she would support being in the bylaws, where she would move support for to initiate and the staff recommendation to the manual. You did say before that how a party is affected may not be clear and may take a while.
The right answer may be we're not affected, but we believe this is something, a policy issue that ICANN has to look at.
Sure, and that could be put into an issues report, right? I mean, there's nothing stopping that. This isn't saying the criteria on which it would be judged by the council to go forward. It's just saying these are things that the council would like to see from the party submitting the request to put into an issues report.
Yeah, I also can live with them in the bylaws. I'm not sure I need see the need for it, but I can certainly live with it.
Okay. James?
Thanks, Jeff. James speaking, and I apologize for the background noise and the fact that I don't have the document in front of me, so I'm doing this somewhat from memory. But I kind of share Aubrey's reasoning, but I come to the opposite conclusion and side more with Paul and what we should do with this. I think that, as a contracted party, we'd like to see more of these elements in the bylaws to provide some degree of consistency over the PDPs, because there are so many various ways of doing this work within the GNSO. I think that, we need, that requires us to have a greater or more solid foundation, and I think that, only the bylaws can provide that. To your kind of overarching question, I think I'm happy with these elements being included in the bylaws and would probably like to see more detail for each of these, particularly for the ones that ask the person raising the issue or the entity raising the issue how they're affected. I'd also like to see some sort of a test for, this is maybe getting off topic a little bit, but some sort of a test for those that are raising an issue and claim to be speaking in the, in the public interest. I think that, a lot of competing claims could be made, under the auspices of the public interest. And I think that, if that's going to be something that's used to generate an issues report or launch a PDP, I think that there probably needs to be, some more specificity provided on how that's determined, how the public interest is determined. So. So in summary, I guess, I think I'd like to see more of these, these items in the bylaws. I'd like to see more details, and specifically on those that are shown to be the affected party as the public good. Thanks.
Okay. Does anyone have any thoughts on that or questions? Or James, you and Paul would...
Jeff, it's Margie. I have some observations.
Yes, sorry. I don't know how I missed that. Okay, Margie, yes.
Okay, yeah, a couple things. I just want to remind you guys of how we got to this point. And the whole impetus for the GNSO Improvements Project was the DGC report that was approved by the board. And in that report, it talks about making the PDP process more flexible and having less in the bylaws. So we're... The reason we took the approach that we did in the report, at least in the suggestions for the bylaws, was it was trying to keep that in mind, to have it be a situation where we're not continuing the practice that we're doing now, as Alan indicated, where the bylaws simply aren't even followed because they just don't make sense. And so we were trying to learn from that experience and provide the flexibility in the, in a different manner. And so certainly as we go through these things, we need to be, cognizant of that's what the board resolution calls for, but also we need to protect, obviously, the important parts of the procedure for the contracted parties. And so there's a balance there that we need to think about as we go through this process. And one of the issues I hear you guys talking about is, we don't want this process changed, willy-nilly. And that's something that that can be addressed in the policy and procedure manual in that amendment section that we were talking about before on how the process can be changed, and that might be an area where the working group can focus its attention on to make sure that you're comfortable with how the manual itself could be changed. And then I don't know if Marika covered this before, but the manual is meant to be part of the rules and procedures of the GNSO Council, which is under the has the board has oversight and approval on that as well. So even though it's not as firm as you will, you know, in the bylaws, it can't be changed, you know, willy nilly. It's a much more serious process, and if it is changed, the board has the oversight to make sure that it's, you know, the procedure processes are fair. So I just wanted to raise those issues.
So I'm going to take off my chair hat for a sec and just address that. So I'm addressing this as a contracted party. I hear what you're saying, Margie, but I even, you know, we talk a lot about politics and perceptions a lot in this world, and I agree from a legal, purely legal analysis standpoint, you're probably right. But when the board posts something about a bylaw change as opposed to a change to a procedural manual, the bylaw change gets a lot of attention. And I know because I've talked to governments and I've talked to a number of people in the community, and they pay attention to bylaw changes, but they do not pay attention, for the most part, when it's a change to a procedural manual. Even people within the community, forget the government, even people within the GNSO, when you talk to in the stakeholder groups, they will pay attention to bylaw change versus a change to the procedural manuals. I mean, look what's going on with the OSC report, where a lot of people didn't even recognize that there were changes, you know, even people on the council, because it was, oh, we're just changing kind of some procedures as opposed to a bylaw change. So I think you're right from a completely legal analysis standpoint that in the end there still is oversight by the board, but I think politically and I think from attention from the community, it does matter what's in the bylaws versus what's in the procedural manual. So I think that needs to be taken into account. And to address one other comment, I think you're right. The Board Governance Committee did make recommendations on taking unrealistic things out of the bylaws and trying to make it more realistic and putting it into procedural manual. I'm not sure that applies to this section. I think it applies definitely with respect to timelines and some other sections. Possibly some of the staff input here may, in the creation of the issues report, may apply to procedural manual. But I think as far as the crux of A, B, C, and even D, I'm not sure that affects unrealistic expectations. But let me put my chair hat on and ask for comments on what I just said. And also, I noticed Alan's in the queue, so if Alan wants to go first, address what I said or whatever you were going to address anyway.
James, okay. If I could get behind Alan as well. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, James. All right.
I'm going to address what you said and go back to what Margie said. I think you're right, unfortunately, that people do pay a lot more attention to the bylaws, and that's a reality we're not likely to change completely. On the other hand, the recent, and I'll use the term, a strong term, the recent fiascos with the declaration of interest and the proxy voting on council, both of which have not worked very well, there's a lesson to be learned that we don't want to put too many details in the bylaws because they are going to be harder to change, and we will choose to just ignore them instead of fixing them when we do something really stupid. And both of those rules did not slip in by accident. They were debated and discussed a lot, and they made sense at the time. But they haven't proven to be used to be workable. And I think we're discussing God knows how many hundreds or thousands of details, and we're going to make a few mistakes too, probably some big ones somewhere along the way that once we try to use them, we'll realize this isn't implementable. This doesn't address the issues we needed to address. And so we want to be careful. I'm not debating the ABCD points, but in general, I think we want to be very careful that we not have so much confidence in what we're doing that we believe it should be immutable and unchangeable as it is effectively in the bylaws. Thank you.
Right, and I think that's a really good point about, you know, ensuring flexibility on some of these to make sure that, you know, we're kind of guessing here a lot of things, and so we don't want to make something so hard that we can't change it in the future. But, again, that there's got to be a balance. As I think everyone's agreeing that there needs to be a balance. James?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and withdraw. I think that, you know, what you put forward, I just support that and sign on to your earlier statements about, relative to the recommendation of, you know, what should and should not be in the bylaws and where that's appropriately applied. So I support you on that, Jeff.
Okay, so what I want to do is I think the debate is understood, and I think we probably need to put some explanation in the report as to and there is sort of some explanation already in there, but just review that as to kind of the debate we're having in this group on the philosophical level of why things are important to some to be in the bylaws and why things are important for some to be in the procedural manuals. But from now on, when we talk about this, because this is going to come up with a lot of different issues, if we could focus on the specifics of that of that provision in the bylaws, as opposed to getting into the broader discussion, that would be helpful. And what I'm hearing now is that certainly the group agrees with, or I've heard no objection from the group for at least the elements that are identified in A, B, and C. I've heard with respect to D that, at least Alan said that he could live with it, doesn't understand the need for it. Avery would prefer D to be in the procedural manual, and I don't think we've specifically addressed E, actually we should address E. So before I get to E, though, Marika, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Marika. It's more on a general note. I think if people look indeed at what is in the draft final report as the proposed elements for the bylaws, it might be helpful there if you know, people look at that and then indicate which elements they feel are missing or what they would expect to be there, and then we can have them at some point the overall discussion on indeed what should be in there and what shouldn't based on the feedback within the work team on the overall bylaw proposal, basically.
Yeah, I think that's good, and I think you made the point better than I did earlier on when we were going through the document. But, yeah, I think it's going to be crucial for everyone to review what in the draft is put into the bylaws versus what's put into the manual and the ramifications they think that will have. So this is drawing it out specifically with respect to one issue. But you're right. I think there were some interpretations made based on discussions where we put things into bylaws versus manual, and people should review that. So with respect to this particular recommendation, with respect to, again, A, B, and C, I think there's no objection to having that in the manual. D, there's a little bit of objection. And E, we haven't gotten to yet. E is the... Just to remind everyone, and then I'll get back to Avery, E was the a recommendation from the staff manager as to whether the council should initiate this PDP. Each staff recommendation shall include the opinion of the general counsel as to whether it's in scope, and in determining whether it's in scope, there's five elements that are listed, sub-elements that are listed as to whether it's in scope. And I think, to be fair... Margie, do you want to give some time?
This is Margie on the ABCD. Identity, how that party's affected the support. Here's D, support for the issue to initiate the PDP. As someone who's drafted an issues report, we don't know what that is. And so I would propose taking out D. Or maybe put if known, because when you're trying to analyze the issue and present the issues in the issues report, there's a lot. Oftentimes, this is a problem that Marika and I and others have had, is we just don't have the information to be able to answer some of these questions. And so the question is that one really important?
Well, so a couple things. I mean, you could always go back to the party that asked for the issues report and say, I need you to tell me what the support was from your group and how you got here, and you could just put whatever they said. I guess what I'm trying to say, no one's expecting you to have everything perfect, and if you don't know the answer, then you'd put that in the issues report. You don't know it, or you know, it's really just to the best of your ability to put it in there. I don't think anyone's expecting perfection, but let me, Aubrey, do you want to comment on that, or is
no,
there something
else? I was commenting on the general issue, not specifically on that point.
Okay, so do you have a comment on
My general issue is that I think, and I totally agree, we need to go through the bylaws and be very specific. I think that most things need to have a reference in the bylaws, but I think the specificity about what that element is in the procedures.
If you can give an example of that, so what would it say here? Obviously not legalese, but your idea of what you think it would say here and how that reference would look.
Okay, basically, I mean, I would think, and again, it's not bylaws legalese, so a truck can probably be driven through it.
Yes.
But basically, it should say that there needs to be comment from, I mean, there needs to be response in an issues report from the staff about the relevant issues and appropriateness of the PDP. And I think in the procedures you would call out, is it in scope, is it this, is it that, what is it financial, what if it's another, you list all of the group of things that may or may not be relevant to a specific thing, so that in the bylaws you're saying that they've got to respond and take into account all appropriate issues. And in the procedures they say, among the appropriate issues, including inter alia, are A through Z. And then there's a pick and choose, because not all issues are relevant in everything. So that's what I mean about the bylaws put the general requirement for issues response, but the procedures get into the specifics of what may or may not be required in that response. Now, maybe in scope or out of scope is one of those that belongs in bylaws and not just in procedures. I'm, you know, although no one really knows what in scope and out of scope ever really means, so it's a general enough term. But that's the kind of example, that's the kind of point I'm trying to make, is that there needs to be a reflection in both bylaws and in procedures of these things. One is the general case that says it's got to be done, and one is the specific case, and this is what we mean by it got to be done. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey. Alan?
Yeah, I think we need to – I agree with what Aubrey just said. I think we need to remember that a few years from now, none of the people who – are writing these documents or participate in this working group are likely to be the ones who are drafting the issues report or making the judgment on them in council. And the words that we put in are going to stand on their own, and people will interpret them in any way that they believe is reasonable if they're not sufficiently constrained by the words itself. So for us to say, well, we know something may not be really important, but they should have to put it in, someone later is going to judge it wouldn't have been put in unless it's really important, and therefore, you know, there's a high threshold to get over to judge it reasonable. So I just caution us to remember that no one is going to listen to these teleconferences again. No one is going to read our final report 3 years from now when they're using the product that we're creating. And I think we need to remember that.
I think that's a good point, and I hope no one listens to our recordings 3 years from now. I think those are good points. I think you're right that we're not going to be around, so people need to understand the words we're using. But I do think, at least with respect to A, B, and C in there, I think those are ones where we certainly seem to, as a group, understand what was meant by those. At least to a well enough extent. Yeah, I think it's certainly subject to interpretation, and maybe that's a reason for D to go into the manual. I think there's actually a couple different parts with E about a staff recommendation as to whether a PDP should go forward is actually separate from the issue of whether something's in scope or not. Do people agree with? Let me pull it apart a little bit. Do people agree that those are really two different questions? They may depend on each other, but they are really two separate questions. Okay, well, at least Paul agrees, Aubrey, Joe, and Margie agrees. Aubrey, do you have a comment on that, or is it just a left up hand? Okay, Margie does have a comment, yes?
I have a comment on E. As someone who's written a report and trying to understand what this means, and going back to what Alan said about when we put something in the bylaws that you know that it stands on its face and we understand what's intended. At staff, I've struggled with not one, what's with the scope of the mission statement. That makes sense. Two, broadly applicable to multiple situations or organizations. That's sort of a weird one. So it'd be great to get clarification on that in the manual. The one that seems to me to be always difficult to address is the likely to have lasting value or applicability, albeit the need for occasional updates. I honestly had no idea what that meant. And in drafting, you know, if you go back and look at the issues report for vertical integration, for example, it's probably, in my view, the weakest part of the report because I just didn't understand what that meant. So to the extent that you know we're going to keep some of this in the bylaws, I want us to really not just default to what was done in the past just because it was done in the past, but really understand why we're doing it and what we mean by it, and to the extent that it's something new or different, have clarification in the manual.
We can always retain Louis Tutton to help us. I think he wrote that.
So, I almost felt like calling him up because it really was. I just had no idea what was intended by this. And
I understand that. I was kind of making a joke. But you know when that came out, that language came out when it was a comment when the DNSO at the time wanted to do a policy development process on just the waitlist service, whether Verisign could introduce the waitlist service. And there was a big debate going back and forth as to whether you could have a policy development process that only applied to one entity, meaning Verisign at the time, and whether you could have something that's just directed at a one-time event as opposed to a general principle, right? So the way that was, from what I remember, it was a recommendation by staff saying a PDP only on the waitlist service was not appropriate because it only applied to one organization, and it wasn't appropriate because it was only for one service that wasn't going to set general principles for future services. And then that's when we all diverted the attention from the one service to let's do a funnel process and come up with some registry services evaluation process so that we, you know, contracted parties or registries could have certainty, and also non-contracted parties and registrars could have input into the process as well. So that's kind of where it came about, but I do agree that the words as used here in the bylaws, certainly the only reason I know that is because I was around then, but, you know, I hopefully won't be around forever on that, and so we do need to, I agree with you, even if this language stays in the bylaws, we would certainly need to explain it in the procedural manual. Or maybe some of these, maybe it's just the requirement that the general counsel does issue a statement in the issues report as to whether it's within scope or not within scope. And then in, like, kind of using the Aubrey analogy, you basically leave the details to say, you know, for the purposes of determining whether something's in scope or out of scope, the following should be considered. And then you put that in the manual. So I think that's a way to kind of divide that up, but still keep the requirement in the bylaws to have that determination made. And remember, the ramification of that determination being made is that there's a higher threshold to initiate the PDP, right? So it may be important to keep the in-scope, out-of-scope language in the bylaws to trigger that threshold vote, but leave the detail to the manual. That could be a way we could handle it. Anyone have any thoughts on that?
I generally agree.
Okay, Paul?
Yeah, the same thing. I agree with the way you've laid it out, Jeff.
Okay. And Aubrey agrees. Good. Sounds like we've got agreement on that. Marika, did you capture that?
Not completely, but I hope in your edits to the report you will capture it.
Okay. Thanks. Good one. I think with E, we're separating the questions right now as to whether there's really two recommendations in E as currently in the bylaws. One is that there's a determination of in-scope, and the second determination is whether a recommendation as to whether the council should initiate a PDP. Those are two different ones. The one we're talking about now is the determination of whether something is in-scope or not within scope. And I think what was sort of people were nodding their heads, I guess I don't know if they're nodding their heads, but sort of agreeing with, was the notion that the determination of whether something's in scope or out of scope should stay in the bylaws, but the factors as to what goes into that determination should be something for the manual. And then a sub-point to that is to make sure that we're all comfortable that we understand what those sub-points mean. And I've heard from Margie that a couple of those are difficult to interpret at best, and we should probably work on making that more concrete in the manual. So with the second question, the second subpart as to whether the PDP, whether the council should initiate the PDP, I suppose part of that determination or part of the factors that would go in was to whether it's in scope. But I think there could be a whole host of other factors that could be considered by ICANN staff, namely resources or other things that would lead to a recommendation as to whether they believe a PDP should be initiated. And for that, it seems like that kind of detail could logically go into a manual as opposed to the bylaws, as it really is just an opinion that doesn't really – it's not like if the council said, or sorry, if the staff had said it's in scope, but we don't recommend going forward with it, that doesn't change the threshold. So at least in my mind, thinking about it, and again, I guess I'll take off my chair hat for this, although it's just kind of logic. In my mind, since it doesn't really trigger an increased threshold, since the council is free to basically ignore what the staff says as far as whether it thinks a PDP should go forward, you know, at least in my mind, it would seem that that kind of determination makes more sense in the manual as opposed to the bylaws. But I don't have a real strong opinion on it. It just seems logical that that would, using the rationale I had for the in-scope, out-of-scope. People have thoughts with that? Agreement, disagreement, just plain tired. You love policy development so much, you just are speechless.
All of the above.
All right, so why don't we, Margie agrees, good. So why don't we make those kind of, I think that seems like a way forward with respect to this recommendation 6. And at least that's the way we'll draft it. Again, please comment on the words that we use and the concepts. You certainly will have that ability to do, and we certainly recommend it, as Marika reminded me. And Marika, you have a comment?
Yeah, it is, Marika. I actually have a question on how we move forward from here, because this, of course, would require a change in, you know, the section on the bylaws and the section on the procedure manual, probably in the recommendations. So my question is, does the group first want to review what is there now, provide added comments, and, you know, we integrate them and then we start making, you know, the big changes? Or does the group prefer that, you know, based on discussions we, you know, we had today, that I already make these changes in the report and then send out another, a revised version that people can review, or that I for now just take note in this table of the agreed-upon approach, and once we've, you know, reviewed the current draft, then we start incorporating these other elements that we've, you know, reached consensus on? You know, what is the best way forward in, you know, taking in all the, giving everyone a chance to review and suggest edits and provide comments, but also at the same time, you know, working along and having further discussions and deciding on issues? How can we best manage that process?
So I'll give you my opinion, and then everyone else is certainly free to agree, disagree, or revise. But since it sounds like we're moving forward and coming to some sort of conclusion on this issue, I'd like to see you start drafting that and putting that into the report. Doesn't necessitate you sending out a new version to everybody, but maybe making one available as soon as you can, or as soon as you get it done, on the wiki, so that, you know, those of us that are on the call at least can feel comfortable that we don't really need to provide the same comments and edits to this section for things that we've discussed. That's my opinion, totally an opinion, but anyone else have thoughts on that? So, Marika, does that sound manageable? I mean, it just seems to save people's time so that they don't have to now all do their own edits to reflect what we believe was discussed on the call, and then you're faced with 10 different versions, and I'm being optimistic that 10 different people will submit comments, so that you don't have 10 different versions of the same document and then have to grapple between which words and whose you should adopt.
This is Riga. That's fine. My only concern would be, you know, to make sure that people then review the last version, or that there might be a situation where people are reviewing an older version, you know, before I have a chance to send out a new one, and then it becomes very difficult to compare changes on previous versions and trying to find where it is now in the new version. So, you know, it could potentially be very confusing and create a lot of work. So, I mean, I think this is a... You know, this will require a big change, or it's, you know, related to specific sections. So I think here it might not be a big issue, but maybe if we can try to get a sense from the work team whether, you know, when they will have a chance to actually review the current draft and provide, you know, comments on that, because it's as well simple things of us wording, or it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, you don't agree with the recommendation, but maybe not the way it's written, or the word choice of words. So I presume there are as well minor things people want to comment on. So it would be good as well if we can agree on a kind of process for that, or if people really prefer to wait until the end, once we figured out all the recommendations, then focus on, you know, the dots and then the I's and the T's and things like that. So I just want to avoid that we're working on different versions and making the whole process very complicated for everyone.
Yeah, I think what you could do then is, and then I agree, is what you could do after this call, you could basically say, okay, guys, the report's still good. I'm making changes to recommendation 6 in line with the call, but please continue on reviewing the other sections and submitting comments. I think if we wait till we're done to have people submit their comments, it's going to slow things down. But if you send out a note basically saying, hey, this section, pages whatever, we're in the process of revising based on the call, don't look any further into that section, review everything else. Get me comments on everything else.
Hey, Jeff, this is James. I'm sorry, I have to drop off. So thanks, everyone.
Thanks, James. Why don't we try it, Rick, and if it becomes too unmanageable, then we'll figure out a different way, because I want people to start reviewing it now and not to wait, if that's possible.
Yeah, that's fine. And I think, yeah, from the conversation now, it's clear which elements we'll be revising. So I think that's fine. What I will do as well for next version is to incorporate line numbering, so we'll make it easier as well. You know, we're going back and forth on what's in the report to refer to certain sections or indicate which lines we're working on. So that's fine. Just a question before we maybe lose more people. Can we maybe talk about the session in Cartagena and what to do with it?
Yes, that's exactly where I was going to go. So given that we're on page 1 of 10 of these issues, but I think we've made some good progress, we're going to have a call next week where hopefully we'll get through a few more of them. But it seems to me that my own inclination is to have just a work session during that time or during a time there, as opposed to a full-on stuff to present to the community, with the possibility of maybe us preparing some slides that each of the groups can take back to their constituency stakeholder group, advisory committee, with some just direction as to what we've been talking about and where we've gone, so that we don't miss all of our chance to get some input. And, of course, I'll give the council an overview of what we've discussed as well. But my inclination is we have some good opportunity to meet face-to-face to get some work done. And so my own recommendation would be to kind of keep it as a working session. But I'd love to hear some input on that.
I support that.
All supported. Yeah. Okay. So, Marika, do you think that's okay? Is there anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, that isn't Marika. It just means that because basically the title it currently has is let me just check the currently the session is called the new Genosoap Policy Development Process an update, and the description talks more about that. It's and the session will provide an update on the status of the draft final report and proposed new Genosoap policy process. So basically you would like me to change this and just turn this into a working session of the work team.
Right, and we can also send around maybe, let's keep the assignment, we could always kind of cancel it, but we can send around if people would prefer doing a breakfast session, because I think there may be some other things that people might want to go to at that time.
Listen, Rick, if we want to change it, it's really better to do it now while the schedule is not final. It will be very complicated once the schedule is published, and I think there's I don't know exactly what is the requirement for changing, but I know requesting new sessions, requires executive management approval, basically. So if the group feels that the time that's allocated, that's Wednesday from 9 to 10:30, is unlikely to be workable, I would rather than now try to find a different slot than wait until it's published.
So can we do that then? Are there any open breakfast sessions that we could do? Any days that would be open?
I mean, Wednesday morning, I'm just looking at the draft schedule. I don't think there's an at-large improvements work team B meeting. I don't know, Alan, are you involved in that one?
No, I'm not.
And there is at 8:30 a session starting. That's the AOC promoting competition, consumer trust, and choice. I'm not really sure what that session is about, because I think the ATRT is already presenting its results on Monday, so I'm not really sure what that session is about.
There's supposed to be a fourth work team created under the AOC called the competition.
But that's a year after GTLDs, isn't it?
Yeah, so maybe...
Right, so maybe it's a kind of pre-discussion on what that might be, or... I don't know, but that starts at 8:30. So, I mean, if we really want to do it early, we could do it from 7:30 to 8:30, or do it from 7:30 to 9, and then, be flexible if we know the description of that session to see if we, start a bit later on.
Mariko, was it the Pedner meeting that we were talking about a possible breakfast?
That's on Thursday.
Oh, that is scheduled already. Okay, fine.
Right.
Okay, I just remembered that Cheryl or someone said that breakfasts are starting to get awful filled, so I wasn't sure about that. Okay, thank you.
So let's get that in there. Let's get it in there for a breakfast on Wednesday if we can. If it has to be Tuesday or Monday even, let us know. But I think that works better so that people can be free to go to the the other sessions, because I think there'll be some people interested in going to those. And I believe
you. I'm looking at the schedule. I mean, on Monday morning there's an at-large improvement working A meeting. Are you involved in that, Alan?
No, I'm not involved in any of those. I mean, I may sit in on them, but I'm not an active participant.
There's nothing else until 9 a.m. for the welcome ceremony.
That gives us 2 full hours.
If we start at 7.
Well.
Why don't we do 7:30?
Are the meetings in the conference hotel or is it a walk away or whatever away?
It's a bus. Oh, well, it depends where you're. Well, it's a conference center.
Everything's
so
a walk.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a. I've been told it's a 15-minute bus ride from the Hilton where most of staff.
Then we don't want a 7 o'clock meeting, unless we can do it in the hotel. Well, but then we still have to get to the 9 o'clock meeting. So.
Yeah, and then it's probably difficult to arrange breakfast. So should I go then for Monday 7:30 to 9 request with breakfast in the conference venue?
If it's a breakfast, it has to be someplace central because I don't expect we're all in the same hotels either.
Right.
No, it would be in the conference center.
Oh, okay.
I'm told all funded people are in the same hotel.
Yeah, but we're not all funded.
Understood.
No, but if breakfast is provided, it would be in a conference venue.
Yeah, I think, and that makes sense too, so that people can go directly to the welcome ceremony. So let's do that, I think that makes sense. I think that's good. I think we're getting towards the end of the hour. I'm not really sure we have enough to start the next recommendation. So we'll just start with that next week. Good. I think we make some good progress, and I think we'll make some really good progress. I do encourage people to look and provide comments in advance. So if people could think about the next few recommendations that we'll get on at the next call, I would take recommendations, issue 7, 11, 4, at least those three, if people could provide some comments on in advance of the call, that would certainly advance our discussions next week. Marika, you have another comment?
Yeah, this is Marika. We also still have a number of comments from Mary Wong that we didn't get to last time. I did post an updated version on the wiki. I realized that I didn't fill in all our notes from the last session, and there's still a couple that at some point we need to go back to as well.
Okay. Well, to the extent they relate to any of these issues that we're going to discuss, we could just bring it up in there. To the extent it doesn't, then we'll have to go back. You're right. Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, everyone. Talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks.